Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You know, you can't be afraid. You know, fear gets in the way of so many of us so many oftentimes, and you just got to push that aside and be like, no, not today. We're going to face this.
Sitting across from me today is a very good friend, a colleague in many similar pursuits. His name is Christopher Spitzmiller. I've known Christopher for how many years, Christopher?
About 6 or 7 years, I think.
6 or 7 years. We're both interested in the following. We're both interested in backyard animal husbandry. We both have lots and lots of different kinds of fowl, birds, chickens, geese, peacocks. We love gardens. We love all kinds of landscaping. We love interior design and decoration. And we love many, many other things like cooking and entertaining and building. So our paths cross in many different ways, and it's so nice to have you here at my farm today. I made Christopher drive all the way down from his farm in Millbrook, New York, because I thought it would be nice to interview him right here in situ. But were you okay?
Oh yeah.
Oh good. Yeah. Christopher gets up early, and he stays up late, and he's a hard, hard worker. And he is, as I said in the introduction to his beautiful book, which is called A Year at Clovebrook Farm, I think the best adjective to use for Christopher is industrious, because he is industrious in many different fields. So I want to get down to the basics here. I want to know about your education. I want to know when you first got interested in your big profession, which is, I think, your main profession, which is pottery and the making of some of America's most beautiful lamps that are on tables in houses everywhere, and even in the White House. So how did you start?
So I grew up in East Aurora, New York, which is this little country town outside of Buffalo, where Fisher-Price toys are made and Albert Hubbard had his movement of arts and crafts work. And I love the idea of making something that could enrich your life in some way, that a bowl or something that could put your change in, or an hors d'oeuvre could be served from it. I love that. But I thought that I would have a normal job like everybody else in my family were bankers and lawyers. My grandfather had his own business, and I always aspired to have my own business.
Which was what? What was your grandfather?
He was in the aerospace business. He did pneumatic breathing systems for the Alvin that found the Titanic, and then Ooh. In the end he did the whole breathing system for the space shuttle. So
wow.
That was a big thing.
Wow. Oh. I didn't know that. In Buffalo. And, you know, my mother's family was also in Buffalo.
That's right.
And my grandfather was, he was an artist. Mm-hmm. He was a decorative steel worker. Mm-hmm. And he made the big, beautiful decorative steel gates for many of the Catholic churches in Buffalo. He was honored when he was 99 years old by his union for his artistry. And I used to visit Buffalo a lot, and I did not know about some of these other businesses, but it has been that was a very industrial city.
It was the biggest industrial city of I think New York State forever. And a lot of it was built at the turn of the century. So there's really great architecture there and these big vast houses, and people complain about the snow there. And I'm like, it's just part of the deal. You get 6 or 8 inches and you go to work and you don't let it slow you down, and the planes take off at the airport, and it's life.
So you went to school, grammar school in Buffalo.
So I went to school in grammar school in Buffalo. And then I went to boarding school in New Hampshire. I went to a little boarding school called Proctor Academy. And then after that, I went to St. Lawrence University way up in New York State, and they had a ceramics program, and they would give me a 4.0 and let me do sort of whatever I wanted. And I wanted to go to Rhode Island School of Design. I had taken the summer program there, and they offered for me to go. And my mom was determined for me, the dyslexic in me, to get a liberal arts degree. She was, just stay there and I'll pay for you to go to graduate school wherever you wanted. And I figured I could go back to Rhode Island School of Design as what was called a visiting student. So I went back there for my senior fall, and it was a real kick. You know, and it was, they assigned the same projects year after year. And they also told us, if you can do anything else, you probably should think about it, because it's a hard career to make a go out of. So
in pottery?
In pottery, yeah.
Well, you've done extremely well. Christopher has. I just visited the other day because I really wanted to see what he was really up to in his lamp business. I went and visited his atelier, which is on 35th
Street.
And it is the penthouse in an industrial building way on the west side of Manhattan. And I was very impressed. You have the nicest group of people working up there.
Thank you.
Nice artists. They're all artists because they are all working very diligently on the perfection that you exemplify in your lamp bases. Christopher makes lamp bases on which you put a lamp shade, and these are table lamps primarily. You do some floor lamps, I guess, but describe your lamps.
So they're Asian in influence. I find shapes all over, mostly at auction websites and stuff. And I'll take a photograph, or I'll buy something and I'll make a sketch of it, because I believe it's our job as product designers to take something and make it our own in some way, to not just repeat what is out there. I think that's our big obligation. And all those different jobs that you see being done, I taught myself. I taught myself how to turn the wooden bases, how to do the water gilding. And then eventually I could afford to have different people in the different parts of it. And so we have 3 potters who working the molds. And I sit down and make about 8 lamps when I start, and I pick out the best one, and we use that one is the one that goes into a mold, and we produce out of there. So,
how often do you make a new shape?
I'd say about like maybe 1 or 2 a month.
Wow.
You know.
And how many lamps do you have in your catalog now?
There's an awful lot in there that we offer, and we discontinue things occasionally, but mostly if I make them, they sell, thank God. So I'm happy with that.
And your customer base is?
It's mostly decorators. We sell through to stores, and we have stores all over, from Los Angeles to Palm Springs to Boston and Dallas and everywhere in between.
I was just in a store in New York in the 70s.
KRB.
KRB. If you haven't been to this store, it's a very fun and colorful decorating store. You go there for your lamps. You go there for your tabletop. You go there for, pretty much everything. It is a beautiful, and you have a whole wall of your work. It was very impressive. And I hadn't seen some of those lamps before. She had just gotten the shipment in, and she just opened, right?
Well, she was open before she's moved around town. She was on 79th Street, and then she was on 74th Street, and now she's right on Lexington. And she was literally around the block on 74th, but there's a whole new wave of people who are like, oh, I had no idea you were here. And Kate's the new sort of only game in town. She's got a great color sense and a great style sense.
Yeah, I was very impressed with the colorfulness. Yeah,
I can't go in there without coming home with something. I have to be very disciplined about, like,
yeah, okay, I wanted to buy several glass things in there, and I kept my wallet shut for now. I'm sure I'll go back. But a beautiful store. But I love seeing your lamps all in one place too, because when I visited your studio, I got to see a whole lot of different sized and shaped bases. And these, as I said, are table lamps for the most part, with beautiful, beautiful wooden or metal bases, and then beautiful metal. What do you call the tops of the lamps?
Clusters. It's a double cluster in there that has 2 lights, so you can have one on or both of them on.
Right. And then, do you also design the finials?
We don't have, but the finials are sort of, I picked it out. It's a ball finial that you have to be careful when you take it on and off because it's kind of like a little bomb. So you got to be like, okay, I've got it in my hand now. Oh. Can't fall.
Why? Well, it's a pottery bowl?
It's brass, and it's a brass. Heavy brass ball. Oh.
Okay. But I love finials, and I've always collected them for lamps. Mm-hmm. So I'm always looking for the old finials that you can find sometimes. But see, here I am building Christopher's business. I want you to do more finials.
Thank you.
I want you to do more.
Thank you.
You should do birds, and you know, you should. You should do some, you know, fantastic chicken finials. I'd buy some of those.
Yeah.
You know, pretty pottery. You could make molds out of, in your shop right there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So maybe he's going to go making some finials. But you're doing so many other things. Christopher's now not only maintaining this very lively business. Who manufactures your lamps in quantity for the marketplace?
So we do them through Visual Comfort. They're my sort of business partner in it. And, you know, I realized that we got the main living room and the library and the main bedrooms, but there were sort of extra bedrooms and stuff that didn't always get my lamps in it, or people who were just starting out. I wanted to be more available, and Visual Comfort does a very good job of making them more accessible
more
to everybody
affordable.
And more affordable.
Yeah. So a basic lamp through Visual Comfort would be about how much?
$1,200.
Uh-huh, for a lamp. Mm-hmm. And then your custom-made lamps are?
About $2,500 to $3,500 a piece.
Uh-huh. Oh. Without the shade.
The shade comes with it. A paper shade
comes
with it.
Oh, it does. Paper shade.
If you want to get a fancier shade, which I know you're a fan of, then that's another.
Oh, I love fancy shades, but it's getting harder and harder to find shade makers. I have one friend who makes beautiful shades, and her business is called Shades of the Midnight Sun. Uh-huh. And she has a small workshop on the Hudson River, and she's in Bronxville. But to go to and visit her and see the shapes of the metal shapes that she designs for the lamps, it's very complicated. And they have to be the right size and the right height and the right width for the bases, like your beautiful pottery bases. So it's lamps are hard. And that's
I'm here to make it easy.
But that's why you're successful, because you make it
easier.
Well,
that's the thing is, when I started, I was making plates and dishes, and I sort of steered away from that. Richard Keith Langham came to me at Meacock's Gardens that first summer that I was up there when I started, and he's like, I need you to make these. And in the very beginning, I just made him the vase, and Keith would have a base made for it and have it electrified. And that's when I learned how to do those different parts of it, of turning the base fit just so, and the best of everything. Yeah. So,
well, they're beautiful. And I watched the water gilding the other day at your atelier, and it was so pretty to see that. And a very pretty girl is sitting in a little room all by herself, just happily.
You know, she just came along. Like, that's people ask of, like, how do you get people to help you? And she has a basic pottery experience, but really not enough to be a potter. But I thought she can be a gilder, and we'll teach her how to gild, and we've taught her what she needs to know. Because you can't just largely hire a gilder. They're kind of hard people to find out there. But if you get a person who's got a good attitude and basic hand skills, you can teach them anything, which I'm a big fan
of. Well, I'm going to send Alexis Stewart to you, because Alexis is busy raising her kids right now. But she was a fantastic gilder. Mm-hmm. She took it up as a hobby, I guess, during college. And I remember building a room for her in East Hampton that was air-free, no current, no air current, completely still room, because that's what you really have to have, right? You can't have any drafts. Mm-hmm. It'll blow the gold leaf around. But I think I'll suggest to her that she come work for Christopher Spitz Miller. Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So the lamp business is thriving, and you spend how much time with the lamps during the week?
I'm in the city 3 to 4 days a week, and then I'm up in Millbrook the rest of the time. Up in Millbrook, we have a studio that makes plates and dishes and accessory pieces up there.
And I've been the lucky recipient of a beautiful set of pinkish painted plates, which I love, the marble, yeah. And I use that in Maine, on my table in Maine, because the table is pink granite, and it just looks so perfect there. And how many people are working in that studio?
Two right now work up there.
Uh-huh. And they have the molds, they have the kilns, they have everything you're making.
Yeah, we have a silhouette of the bottom part of the plate, and then we roll a slab out and attach it to the mold, and then the lever comes down and cuts back the foot and stuff, and then the plate dries on the mold, and we take it off, and when we put on one coat of the white all over it, and then we splash the color on and move it around, get the right amount of movement in it and stop. Or then we have a whole series of dahlias that I've grown at the farm. My rule about plates up there is I have to grow the flower in order for it to get on the plate. We have a group of peony plates, a group of sweet pea plates, and we've done some mushrooms. And then I collaborate with friends, like my friend Kathy Graham has some woodland plates that we do with her, and Marion McAvoy. So I like to do that.
And I like your collaborations too, not only on the plates, but also on your lamps. You're working with one of the best porcelain flower makers in the whole. They're porcelain, right?
Yes.
Flowers, the most beautiful porcelain flowers you have ever seen. This is museum quality stuff, and she is just exquisite.
Claire Potter, who's been a friend of mine now for quite a long time, and you know she
and her name is Claire Potter.
Oh. And so when we do things together, it's called Potter Spitzmiller, which is a nice little anagram to have. And we'll make either vases or lamp parts, and I'll give Claire the wet vase, and Claire attaches sweet peas or hellebores or whatever gets her fancy. And she'll ask me sometimes, "What do you think should be on here?" And I'm like, "That's your business. I don't get into that."
So she does
the picking of the thing. I mean, the client has something to do with it. The clients could say, "I like sweet peas," or I
have
this.
Looked at Claire Potter's fingers, and they are so delicate. And that she makes these flowers that she affixes to your lamps, and she also just does individual flowers for her artwork that are display flowers, and you put them, you know, down the center of the table or something. These are exquisite things. So, and now because of Christopher and because of people like Claire Potter, I have been looking online on Instagram. I somehow got into the algorithm of pottery.
She sends me all these pottery things.
I do. Like, I send them to Christopher.
Pottery hole, you know, and I get them at weird times. And I'm like, oh, gosh, she's not asleep.
I'm at 3 o'clock in the morning looking at pottery being made. No, no. But it's so interesting.
It really is.
I love the techniques. But what I saw at your studio is the most interesting, really. Those heavily textured lamp bases that you're making are so exquisite, so sharp. Everything's so beautiful.
Yeah, there's a crispness that I like to have in them, which is sort of my version of a perfection. The things aren't perfect because they're handmade, but the lines are really crisp and the bases are perfect, and it all sort of comes together and gives you a really good look.
But I did give you an indication that Christopher is multifaceted. He's not just a lamp base maker or a lamp maker. He is also an interior designer. Did you ever work for Albert Hadley, or is he just
your
idol?
No, he was just a really good friend and mentor, and was really very inspirational. And he was a good client. He ordered lots of my lamps and would say, "I want you to do this for this person and that for that person." And so he got behind a lot of young talent like myself and pushed us forward. Kevin worked there.
Kevin Sharkey loved working for Albert Hadley. He idolized him.
Everybody did. You can't find anybody who says anything bad about Albert Hadley.
I met him a few times because he lived in Fairfield.
He loved you. You know, he had those bumper stickers made, the Martha for President bumper stickers. He thought you were the cat's meow in a lot of ways.
Well, he was a charming and very talented man. And Sister Parrish, he worked with Parrish Hadley. Did you ever meet Sister Parrish?
I was gone by the time Sister was good. I wasn't on the scene, but by the time Sister Parrish came around, so I missed meeting her.
No, that's too bad. She was something. She did a lot of houses up in Mount Desert Island in Maine for some very illustrious citizens up there.
I've been and stayed at her house in Islesboro, and it's like she's alive because everything is like in its right place.
Exactly.
And she comes out at night, and Apple and her daughter Susan take really good care of it, and now Liza there. So it's like a little dream.
That's nice. But you love interior design.
I do. I love all kinds of juxtaposition of colors in rooms. I like to be the pop of color there. Like in my own library, I have some marigold lamps with some light blue background in there so that we sort of jump out. That's what I like.
But when you go through your rooms when you travel with Christopher through his own beautiful house, which is a 1830 federal kind of farmhouse, set in a field in Millbrook, New York, with a pond and a pool and a pool house and a walled garden. You think, oh my gosh, you know, this house, you're surprised when you go inside because every object has a story.
It does. But first of all, the house wasn't like that in the beginning. It was falling down. There were big holes in it.
But that's the best kind of house.
There were bats living in it. There were honeybees in there. There was all this stuff,
you know, that
I had to straighten out. And I could only do it as my finances allowed. And I would get so far. And things like the recession would come along and I'd have to stop working. But, you know, it was like 5 or 6 years of hard, expensive restoration, like new fireplaces and new bathrooms and
new
windows,
heating, air conditioning.
And an Architectural Digest would call and say, oh, we want to photograph the house. And I'm like, well, if you want to photograph the new chimneys or flues I just put in, you're welcome to, but there's really nothing interesting to see here yet. So the decoration part was sort of easy. That took about a year and a half. And now it's nice because all the projects are outside of the house, like gardens and building the barn and getting that all together.
But what's nice when you walk around your house, you say, oh, that comes from that auction.
Yeah.
That comes from the estate of so-and-so. Yeah. So who else? What other designers?
There's a lot of Albert Hadley in the house. Every room has something of his in it. My desk in the living room was Keith Irvine's desk. There's pieces from Sister Parrish. There's pieces from everybody in there. The pieces from you. I like to have a collection of things that my friends have made or have been a part of their life at some point. It's sort of a little bit more meaningful to integrate them into your house and have them be there.
But you have your stuff in a lot of houses too. And most impressive is that lamps got into the White House. Now, how did that happen?
I was an intern there in 1994, I believe, when I moved to Washington by chance. My roommate at the time was friends with the director of the White House intern program, and I was waffling around looking for a job, which wasn't appearing. She said, why don't you come be an intern? And so I went to work for the Clintons, and I could see then how magnificent that house is and how incredible it was. And they made a big effort to move crafts from the Smithsonian over, so a table in the executive office might have a Dale Chihuly sculpture on it or a Native American thing. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be incredible to make something for this house someday? And when the Clintons left, I made a lot of things for the house in Chappaqua and their house in Washington. And when the George Bushes moved in, I made some things for the upstairs of the White House for them. And then when the Obamas were elected, I wrote Michael Smith a letter and said, hey, I'd like to make some things.
Yeah.
You can't wait there. Like,
see,
that's
I
the
talked
thing
about is, industriousness.
You've
there
got to
is.
Reach out and say, I can do this. Can I help you with this? You know, you can't be afraid. You know, fear gets in the way of so many of us so many oftentimes. And you just got to push that aside and be like, no, not today. We're going to face this. And Michael wrote me right away and he came to my studio in the midst of that 2008 recession. He showed me a picture of the Oval Office in my lamps at the end. When I volunteered to make it, I never thought that I would get such a prominent spot as that. So
Oval
I felt
Office.
Really, really lucky and very thankful.
So have you thought about why you focused on lamps?
It just seemed to be the thing. You know, it worked for me for a lot of years, but I've started to make plates again and more accessory things and catch pots that you could put flowers in. Like we do some mirrors. We do all kinds of different things, anything for around the house. But the lamps are sort of like the main and bread and butter of the business.
Catch pots. And those cash pole?
Yes.
But yeah. Is that the way Americans say it, catch pots?
It sort of is. I should
or do
say
you make
that
it for fun? Or do you make it for fun? You say it for fun.
A little bit of tongue in cheek there.
Yeah,
too.
I think it is. So a cash pole is like a tall bowl in which you put a potted plant or flowers or so. I like that you call them catch pots. I like that because they are catching
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, you catch the different
okay.
things.
But all of you out there, they're really cash pots. So, Christopher, before we leave the subject of your beautiful lamps, what are the do's and don'ts that you should pay attention to when choosing a lamp for a room?
You got to think where the lamp is going to be. Like if you're going to sit next to the lamp, you don't want to stare up into the light fixture of it so that the shade is just high enough that you can get some light down on your reading but isn't too tall. You want to think about how much light it puts off. My lamps have double clusters, so you can put two different bulbs in there or have double heights for it. You can see about a dimmer, which is a very important thing. Mm. I love a dimmer either on the cord switch or on the switch itself.
And shades should come down how far onto a lamp?
Depending on the height where it's going to sit. Like if it's going to go on your bureau, it can be up a little bit higher, but maybe you won't want the lamp to be so high. So maybe like a 16-inch lamp for up there in your library and stuff. Maybe you have like a 18-inch lamp in there.
But you don't want to see the middle part of it.
You don't want
lamp.
To see the metal part. You want the shade to hit right across thing. So it's kind of like, I think, you know, our electrical parts are very pretty and people like to see them, but I like it to just sort of be right resting at the shade height that where the cap height is. Okay. So it rests right across there is, I think, the proper height.
Great. So what are some emerging interior design trends that you observe now?
I'm not a huge trend follower, but I'll tell you things that I admire. I admire people who can mix, like my friend Ashley Whitaker, who can mix a lot of different patterns together and have them look right. Everybody thinks you can only have like one pattern or one this, and Ashley will layer in three or four or sometimes five different patterns in a room that she's creating. And what it's about is making somebody feel comfortable. Like that's what it is about more than anything about, even more important than the visual impact. It's that you can sit down on a sofa, put your feet up on it and be like, oh, I'm at home. I want to relax here. I want to spend some time in this room.
Who else? Who else do you admire in the world of design?
In that sort of bright sort of colorway, Miles Redd is another favorite, and Nick Olson, who worked for him. Like they're big in that sort of color sort of juxtaposition that I like so much, where there's a contrast trim on all the different pieces, all that kind of like pizzazz and glamour. That's what I'm a fan of.
Now, how many years ago did you start writing? Because your book came out in what year? 2000
and it was during the pandemic. It was in March. So
2020?
21.
Oh, 2021. And the book is called A Year at Clovebrook Farm. It is a big, heavy book published by Rizzoli. And there's a picture of Christopher with his two dogs on the front porch. Or is that the side porch?
That's the kitchen porch.
Yeah, so it's kitchen the side porch. Yeah, side porch.
Essentially our front door.
Yeah. With lots of topiary and beautifully potted plants. And how long did that book take you to write?
It took 3 years for me to write it. You know, a lot of the publishers wanted me to do a book about the rooms that my lamps go into and about what they look like. And I wanted to do something more like you would do. You know, when your book, Entertaining, came
Lifestyle.
Out, I was 11 years old. And I still remember seeing it on my mother's kitchen table and looking at it and being like, this is the life that I want to live someday. You know, not
really?
Not exactly Martha's life, but that abundance of a table with a cornucopia of things and the copper pots everywhere. And there was just a lot of love and a lot of warmth. And like, this is a place that I said before, like, I want to spend some time. I want to hang out. I never imagined that one day I'd be spending Thanksgiving in her kitchen and cutting the turkey open with her one day, but it's just all sort of evolved that way. But I wanted to do
a
book.
We had a lot of mutual friends.
We have a huge amount of mutual friends.
Yeah, so many. And our interests merged so in so many different areas. So that's really, I think, what happened. And now you are happily married to Anthony Bellomo. When did you meet Anthony and how?
I met Anthony 4 years ago. A friend fixed us up, and she initially tried to fix him up with me, and he went home and Googled me and was like, no, he's far too fancy for me. I don't want to go out with him. No.
He thought you were fancy?
He thought I was fancy. I clean the cat litter box myself, and I do all of this really kind of gross things myself, which it's part of having a farm.
Of course, you know,
you have to roll your sleeves up and do it all. And so it was Thanksgiving, and Emily said to me, why don't you reach out to Anthony? And I did. And we went and had a dinner at Flora Bar in New York, which was a favorite of both of ours. And
Sadly,
no longer.
But I went to the Corner Bar.
So there's a new place coming up.
Oh, it was so good. Corner Bar. That's his.
Yeah,
that's
I'm
Ignacio's.
Try that.
Oh, you'll love it. You'll love it. And he made me the omelet the other night. That thin, thin omelet with the caviar. It was very good. So you.
We had our day and things went well, and it just kept going. And I realized that he had become such an integral part in the farm and what was going on there. Like this morning, he was up early feeding the chickens, even before I was out of bed. You know, he's really a very hard worker, just like me. And I had never dated anybody like that who was more of a partner. And I remember when I did some of that online dating and stuff, I said my description, I want to find somebody who I can build something with one day. And I ended up, through a friend, finding that partner. Mm-hmm.
How nice. And you are building, and Anthony started it, I guess, the orangerie.
Yes.
Talk about the orangerie, because
so
this,
in COVID, he worked from the farm, and he really loves spending most of his time up in Millbrook. And he's an architect, landscape architect, and a friend of ours bought this building at the far end of town, and it had been a landscaping business with a big greenhouse, and it's been divided in half, and Creel and Gow is on one part of it, and Anthony is on the other part. And the owner called me up and said, do you know of anybody who would like to take this over? And it didn't occur to me to think of asking Anthony, and I didn't. And thank God Larry called another time and said, would you like know of anybody, maybe you or Anthony would like to do this. And thankfully I said to Anthony, do you want to do this? And he said, yes. And he started a business selling topiary and flowers and all the things I would go to 28th Street and get and drag up there on the weekends. You can now get right in Millbrook.
In Millbrook, yeah. And it is a beautiful shop. So any of you who are driving around looking for an interesting place to visit, certainly visit in Millbrook Orangerie. And the whole town has become a little bit more booming and boisterous. I like Millbrook now. It was very, very quiet for a long time.
It still is quiet in some ways, but there's a little bit of retail going on, and we have a few good restaurants you can go to right now. So
yeah, I like it a lot. But I really like going to your shop and Creel and Gow, which is right next door, which has very extraordinary, very high-end antiques and decorative objects. So it's fun. But Anthony seems to be a really good partner for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is really into it. And what a nice thing to find. How old are you?
I am 51.
He is 51 years old. How old is Anthony?
Anthony is 43.
Oh, so he's a little younger, but not that much. And the name Orangerie?
Came from, you know, the glass box sort of French sort of long sort of greenhouse. You know, he wants to have sort of specimen-y things that are sort of different from what every other place will have. So he doesn't have your sort of regular geraniums. He has like pelargoniums or weird leafed geraniums that have a rough leaf to them and all kinds
and
of different things.
And a single camellia.
And a single camellia.
Not a nice fluffy, multi-petaled camellia, a single camellia. How's your doing?
Mine's doing pretty well. They didn't like it in the house. I try and bring these things in the house for a little bit to enjoy them when they're in flower.
It seems to be a little finicky, that camellia.
Yeah.
I will show you mine and I may hopefully get some advice about it. So your book was published and you have worked, I think, harder than most authors to promote and to take that book all over the country. And people love, they have responded so favorably to how you do it. You give talks at garden clubs, you give talks at antique shows, and then you sell your book. And it's been a very, very successful book launch.
Yeah.
So when's your second book going to come out?
Well, we haven't started working on the second book, but I'm going to soon. I think I'm going to do a book on entertaining will be the next one, and breaking it down and showing all the different parts of it, which this one breaks down things from gardening, things with animals. It's sort of a broad scope sort of book. I want to impart in the reader different things that you can take away from it and do yourself.
Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's talk about our livestock interest. You have the most beautiful, fluffy Sebastopol geese.
Thanks to you, because in COVID, you came over and you brought me 8 goose eggs, and I didn't really want geese. Geese are loud.
They go dirty.
Dirty, smelly. But, you know, when Martha gives you something, you smile and say, thank you very much. You know, I have good manners. And I thought that I would hatch these because I'm a hatchaholic and I love to hatch all kinds of little babies and raise them and find homes for them. So I hatched these geese. And when they were big enough to walk outside of the house, they followed us around like we were their mothers. And we gave them names like Joan Rivers and Pat Oshel and Caroline Rome and Bill Blass. And they're really fun.
Did you ever have a Martha? You never had a Martha.
We have a Martha Peacock.
That's better.
Yeah. So there's a, because you got me going on peacocks as well, too. That was another hole that you led me down. And, you know, 4 peacocks have now led to like 12 peacocks. And
have you seen my Blues Brothers? How beautiful they are.
So beautiful.
Aren't they amazing? They're so fat and...
Goes on about how loud they are and how obnoxious they are, and they're not.
These guys haven't made a noise since the massacre. We had a coyote massacre of some of my nicest peacocks, but since the massacre, these guys are so quiet. I haven't heard them make any noise. I try to talk to them, and they're not talking back. The geese talk back, mm-hmm. but these guys do not talk back to me. So so you have geese, and those geese are beautiful because they're so fluffy and white. They go into your pond. They go into your swimming pool.
They follow us around and just really are really, really, really fun.
It's really
they're more like Labradors than they are like geese, I think. You know, if you spend enough time with them and bond with them, they can be your friends and they can be really like a nice, you know, the chickens and the peacocks I haven't spent enough time with, so we haven't really got that bond. It's whatever you invest in, you can see a return from. And that's the nice thing about what I've done with the geese.
And your interest in cooking, when did that start?
It started when my mom was pregnant. She had a set of twins when I was 14 years old and I was hungry. So I like learned to cook for myself and for her and for anybody who was around. And it's something that I love to do. I love to share and to bring a table together and have people like you over. And sometimes that can be a little bit scary, but I know that I burned the chicken for you and you've enjoyed it just the same, you know.
Didn't taste burned. You know. Looked burned, but it didn't taste burned.
You know, I just think that you got to entertain and bring people, you know, offer them something. And, you know, all of us want the phone to ring, but you got to make some phone calls in order to get that to happen and sort of make your life be what it is.
And you also like to travel.
Love to travel.
Yeah. Where's your favorite places to go?
We're going to go to Nashville to the Antique Show to see the chicken coops that you and I designed.
Yes. That's going to be happening somehow, next week. Somehow Christopher Spitzmiller lured me into yet another project and asked me to design a simple chicken coop that would be auctioned off at the Nashville Antique Show. I didn't really pay attention, except that I drew a model of it for you, and then all of a sudden it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what a big deal it was. Tractor Supply is paying for the construction; they're sponsoring the whole show. I love Tractor Supply. Hal Lawton is an old friend of mine from Home Depot, mm-hmm. so it was kind of weird that this whole thing came together. So Christopher, of course, designs a sort of a Greek revival chicken coop. And I designed a typical Martha, simple farmhouse-looking chicken coop with a lovely cupola. And they haven't sourced the finial yet. They said they would get a local finial down there, copper. But they're going to be nice, and they're being auctioned off for charity at the Nashville Antiques Fair. But everybody's going down there. Stephen Gambrell.
Yeah, it's just a good show. It's
he just
really
told
good.
Me he's flying
it's
down.
It's good for home stuff. It's good for garden stuff. And there's something you can buy there for $20 or $200 or
and
$2,000.
And plants, too. They have beautiful plants.
They have everything.
So if you're planning to go to the Nashville show, always take a truck with you because you
they
always
have shippers,
find
so
things.
You can send things back with the shippers.
Last year I bought some beautiful iron chairs, and I bought some plants, which I brought home with me. And it was a great show. So, and it's been going for how long? How many years?
I think it's been going for about 25 or 30 years. You know, Albert started that show. Albert Hadley started it. And it has had great momentum building around it. And they do a very good job of getting speakers in there and educating people. And it's just a fun experience. And my friends from Alabama and all over the South come to it. And it's a great, great time. And it happens in early February every year when none of us really have very much going on. Right. So I really look forward to it and rarely come home without something. So,
Well, good. So it's been so nice talking to you, Christopher, as we always talk. We just got back last weekend from the Northeastern Poultry
Congress. We love going to the poultry show every year.
Yes.
Every year we get up and we go very early in the morning. And
the chickens I got are very happy.
Are they happy out there?
They're happy. I've isolated them with other like chickens so that they're pretty happy getting very well fed and getting fatter every single day. But it's fun to spend time with you. It's fun to talk to you about all of this. And now that I've seen your lamp studio, it really, really impresses me that the quality of your pottery. I just want to tell you this from Kevin Sharkey. He's going to be so happy with this podcast because Kevin Sharkey said, you know, Christopher's always talking about other things. He's never really talking.
I don't do a really good job of promoting my business, and I should do a better job of that.
I
know, I'm more into like showing people how to grow a auricula or something bizarre like that, which is not on everybody's
thing. How are your auriculas?
They're in sleep. They're in dormitory. Uh-huh. Now, we'll bring them in soon and we'll start to fertilize them. And you start to feed them now and warm them up. And then they'll start to flower in the spring and divide them. You know, I sort of like look at my business as sort of like the vehicle that pays for everything. Like they pay for the auriculas and the bulbs and
it's a very
and everything
good thing
else.
To have.
But I need to be a little bit better about the business that I'm going to take over our business Instagram, push it a little
but
more.
When I saw your lamps, I thought about the lamps. I also designed a whole line of beautiful lamps, but also chandeliers. And I was remembering my kitchen green, like a Fire King chandelier that I designed and looks like a Venetian glass chandelier. And I gave one to Gail Towie. I gave her the inspirational one that was the antique.
Yeah.
And I saw it in her house the other night and I thought, oh, I have to go back to designing chandeliers because people need chandeliers. Anyway, I digress. It's been so great to talk to you. And you are inspirational. You are so encouraging to so many other people. Keep that up because I think people look to you for not only advice, but they also look for inspiration. And
thank you. That's been the great part of listening to your podcast is listening to your friends like Charlotte Beers and Dennis and imparting some of their knowledge and their wisdom out there and having people take away something.
Right. Listen to Alan Grubman too.
I listen to Alan. Alan is very good.
The legal advice. He's so smart.
It's a very diverse group of people that you have.
Alan Grubman has never written a thank you note in his life. I got one yesterday because so many people have called him to tell him how great he sounded. Isn't that nice?
That is good.
So, so it's very fun to be doing this podcast, talking to good friends, old friends, and interesting friends. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. And I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.